I also, during COVID, launched Jalla Jalla, which is, we have two flavours of chocolate and, as of now, have another two flavours of vegan and a dark. So within that space of not even a year, I've developed it into four flavours now and still, hopefully, growing a lot stronger.
It's NAIDOC Week and I'm pretty excited about that. I've seen some great NAIDOC Week stuff around. A lot of people sharing Aboriginal-owned businesses and accounts that they love to follow on social media, and cool things like Channel 10 putting the Aboriginal place names up on the weather map, which I thought was really great. It's just symbolic, but I think symbolism is really important. It's part of changing the conversations around how Australia deals with First Nations issues. And I think it's really good. So today I'm really excited to be speaking to Aboriginal business owner Sharon Brindley. She is a Yamatji Noongar woman and she runs a business on Boonwurrung country on the Mornington Peninsula. Sharon, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Hello, how are you, Danny?
I'm really good. Now, I reckon you're having a better NAIDOC week this year than you did last year, hey?
Oh, 100% better, yes. It was very devastating last year.
Tell
and
me.
For Rec Week this year.
Oh, yeah. It's Reconciliation Week was a bust.
Yes.
It's been really tough. But tell people who might not know much about NAIDOC Week what it is and what it means to you.
Okay. Firstly, I would just like to do a little acknowledgement. I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that you and I are talking on today and pay my respects to all the elders, both past, present, and all the emerging young little deadly ones. So,
thank you.
Yeah, no worries at all. So I think that's really important. That was that we do the acknowledgement. And with NAIDOC Week, I think it ties in perfectly with Hill Country, because doing the acknowledgement means that we're acknowledging the country of which we're on, and we all should be so privileged to be on this beautiful place we call Australia. So we need to appreciate it and look after it a lot more. And so, yeah, it ties in well with this year's NAIDOC Week.
Yeah, well, so the theme of NAIDOC Week this year is Hill Country, as you say. Like, what does that mean to you? What's the resonance of that?
To me, it grounds me. It brings me back to grounds me and brings me back to who I am and what I'm here for, and my elders and what they did, and what we're doing going forward. Like, we really do need to listen to that Hill Country and pay attention. When you look around at we're at a path, we're at a crossroad now where we can go one way or the other, and we really need to Hill Country. I mean, Mother Earth is sick. We really need to heal it to make everything better in the world, with the pollution, with everything. It's just crying out for help. And you can either acknowledge that and start, you know, every little person can make such a big difference, or we can ignore it and it's just going to get worse and worse. So considering we've been looking after it for over 60,000 years, it's very sad of where it's going now. So hopefully this is a big wake-up call for everybody, to be able to focus on just giving back to Mother Earth and looking after it a little bit better.
I mean, truer words have never been spoken. That's so true. I also feel like when I, you know, saw that the theme was Hill Country, I felt that as a challenge to myself. You know, what can I as a white person do to make the terrible state of, you know, what's happened since invasion, what can I do? You know, what is it on me to do to try to create change and, work towards a better future for Australians, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you do a wonderful job. Like, personally, I honestly think you do, and there are so many allies out there that are really making that difference. And I suppose from that perspective, it's acknowledging maybe the traditional elders in the country that you're on, knowing the country that you're actually on, the Indigenous names of the country that you're on, having and hearing about stories of past ancestors that were on that country that you're on, and that will help you feel more connected. Getting out on country more, going out bush, going for walks, getting out in the fresh air and when you're out there, just thinking and acknowledging like the people past, the people before you that were on that country and how it looked and what they did. And just that's something we can all do and be passionate about and be proud about.
I guess another symbolic thing that Australia Post has done is that you can now address your post and parcels using the Aboriginal place names, which again, it's not substantive change, but I think when you get acknowledged and realise and really feel it in your bones that you're on a country, you know, that's not just Melbourne, it's not Australia, you know, that's not where we are. We're, you know, these places had names tens of thousands of years ago, and just, I suppose you can't help but be humbled by that realisation when you really let it seep in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an awesome, it took the lady, I've forgotten her name, I'm not really great with names, but it took her a couple of years to win that battle. So it was pretty amazing for, you know, for herself and for all us mob to be able to acknowledge that and see that. And I saw Channel 10, I think it was Channel 10, I'm pretty sure, when they did the weather, they did them all in country as well. Which was pretty
beautiful.
Amazing. So it's great to see. And from my point of view, nothing makes my heart sing more when you're going to all the places. Like I even went to Bunnings this morning and was taking photos of like their set up and their acknowledgement for, you know, for NAIDOC week. And it makes me very happy, but at the same time, I hope it's not just a tokenistic for the week. I want it to be, not that they have to present that all the time, but you know, I don't want it forgotten because NAIDOC week is every week for us. And so to make it so we acknowledge that it's this week, but then continue it on into the future.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I almost have mixed feelings about getting you on in NAIDOC week. I mean, we've been chatting about having you on the podcast for months anyway.
Yes, I talk to you all the time.
Yeah, but it's like, of course I want to acknowledge NAIDOC week, but I also have this feeling like, well, does that just seem really token? It's like, oh, you know. I don't know. I guess it doesn't seem like the wrong thing to do anyway.
No, it's a conversation piece. And so it's still very important and very valid. And like all the catering that I've, you know, like now, yay, we can cater again, that I'd been doing throughout this week, last week and the next, because not everyone can get it through NAIDOC week, but, it's opening their eyes to, other avenues within their business structure as well, that I'm not just your tokenistic, get you in within that space, but hey, like I do great catering, you know, get me on board, or other Indigenous businesses that they're dealing with. It's like, hey, these are actually a really great business. We're going to keep them. And so I know myself personally, I have gained a lot of work from just starting out with that conversation of a NAIDOC week, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, getting a job, and I've still catered for them today, you know,
yeah. Because,
and not just those occasions, but like longevity catering. And so that it's allowing them to step outside their comfort zone in that week and then continue on that relationship after that week.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Sharon, we haven't even like introduced you properly and said what you do and what your businesses are.
Oh yeah, like, that's right.
You want to take us through it?
Well, I have a few businesses. So I do have Kui Cafe down on the Mornington Peninsula, the lovely peninsula, which, is beautiful down here. It's can you hear the birds in the background?
I can. Yeah.
That's my king parrot letting me know it wants a feed, actually.
Love it.
So I have Kui Cafe down here on the peninsula, and we do catering, obviously, as I've spoken about. So I'm off to the city most days for catering, which is great. And then I also, September gone in during COVID, launched Jalla Jalla, which is we have two flavours of chocolate, and as of now have another two flavours, a vegan and a dark. So
amazing.
Yeah, so within that space of not even a year, I've developed it into four flavors now and still hopefully growing a lot stronger. So,
That's so great. Well, tell us about the, the native element with Jalla Jalla treats.
Well, Jalla Jalla in my language means very good or good or very good. And the turtle, which is my family totem. So I made sure that they were directly on the pack, and I'm very proud of that fact as well. So I want to take Jolla Jolla around the world and showcase all us mob, and seeing language, in another country would be absolutely amazing. Just throughout Australia is amazing enough, but to get it around the world would be just incredible. But we use, for example, we have two white chocolates at the moment. So we have a Davidson plum white chocolate and a lemon myrtle white chocolate. And they're absolutely divine. And we do sell loads of them and are getting great reports. So I'm very, very happy and proud about that. Also, the next two flavors we've just brought out are a vegan wattle seed and a milk chocolate. And a dark, what's my dark? I should know. A mental blank.
What is your dark?
I just fully had a mental blank. My own chocolate.
Okay, watch this space. I'm sure it's amazing. It'll come to you.
It'll come to me. But when I first went into developing the chocolates, a thing I already knew, but I soon learnt a lot quicker as well about the lack of indigenous peoples growing native product, which saddens me. So part of doing these products and developing Jolla Jolla, as I hope to grow into a large business over the coming years, is to help grow indigenous businesses in that space of being able to grow product. It's sitting around the 2-3%, which is just so sad. And so we're hoping to get that. I'm hoping to work to help. And there's plenty of people, indigenous and non-indigenous people, helping to grow indigenous people in that space of getting that to at least 30%. So we've had these lands for thousands of years. And had like full ownership of the lands, and then when they're taken, and then even when mob went to war, they came back, and I was talking to my uncle, actually on my husband's side, so a non-Indigenous man, and he was telling me the horrors of when they went to war, and he had quite a few Indigenous people alongside him, and when they came back, how they were not given land, even though my uncle was, and it said it saddened them, and they tried to like share their land, and they were told if they did that, they weren't entitled to the land either. From way back then, we were never entitled to those same privileges of a white person, and so therefore it's through those generations it's been a lot harder to then recoup. So we're fighting a battle, an uphill battle now, but we're slowly getting there. And hey, I support small business like all the way every day, but this is one of those things that I'm really passionate about, trying to support Indigenous business and trying to establish places for us to be able to grow our own product.
Yeah, well, I think there are so many ways to find out which businesses are Aboriginal owned and then to in turn support them. So Kinaway is a really good resource where you can find Aboriginal owned businesses in every kind of arena. Like, you can find food businesses, you can find a plumber, you can find, every type of industry. And then there are great, or something that I really love, and I know that you've been involved with this as well, is Kayla Cartledge's Our Dilly Bag, where I subscribe to that, and every month you get sent a little pack, and it's got products from Aboriginal owned businesses, which I suppose in the same way that you've talked about your catering, it doesn't only give you something nice for that month. It might be a book, it might be some lip balm, it might be some tea, it might be, and she also does really great booklets and sort of resources talking about things like Australia Day and, or whatever it might be. But it introduces you to those businesses so that you can continue to support them.
Funnily enough, down here on the Mornington Peninsula, there are a few of us small businesses, and I'm just going to give a shout out to a couple that we're actually looking at helping to grow each other, and to withstand the pressures of normal everyday business. So we're forming an Indigenous business hub down here as a collective to be able to look at showcasing and doing a lot more on the school level and on the corporate level. So I just wanted to do a quick shout out to Living Culture, which is a great business. We have got Our Dilly Bag, Our Song Lines, which is Kayla, Balak Arts and Captify. And we've formed a business hub, which we are talking to our local Indigenous chamber about, trying to really grow that space and empower small businesses, small Indigenous businesses. So we have a depot where we can come, and it's like it's our space. Certainly no cultural centre or anything like that, but it's about a collective of businesses. Coming together and just empowering each other. So we're really, like yesterday I was out at Balak's 10th birthday celebration, and it was incredible being there and doing it alongside Living Culture. So it tied in with three things that we did. So we just sort of help each other and shout out to each other on a regular basis. And I think that's just how we operate as Indigenous peoples, just really helping each other just leverage. So
That's so good. I think, you know, a lot of people in big cities kind of feel like Aboriginal culture is somewhere else, you know, that you need to go somewhere else. But as the welcome to country or an acknowledgement of country reinforces, it's like it's all Aboriginal country and there is Aboriginal culture everywhere. I just feel like it's my personal responsibility to try to connect with that as much as I can, and to continue to educate myself as much as possible. Thank you so much for helping me and putting what you're putting out there so that other people can connect to the oldest living culture in the world.
Well, thank you for giving me a platform to be able to do so. I mean, hopefully, watch this space on our Indigenous hub. We're looking at doing camps down here. So there'll be like a full coordinated camps down here for people to come down and have those experiences. And you get to go out on country. You get to try all the bush foods. You get weaving. You get the wayapa. It's going to be amazing. So watch this space for that down here on the peninsula.
Oh, I'm so there, but I need to know what's wayapa.
Oh, that's the Indigenous yoga.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm surprised you're not onto that one, Danny, but I haven't dabbled in it yet either. I should, because I need to do yoga to help me relax, because I swear I have ADHD. But it's definitely beautiful. And Kayla does that. She studied that one. So it's another thing that she does. But we want to try and incorporate this. And so through our own way, sort of like educating through experience. So, yeah.
Sharon, I'd love to hear more about your background and what's brought you to be there on the peninsula doing what you're doing. Can you tell us about your heritage and, what's brought you over to Victoria?
I was born over here, actually. I was born on Wathaurong country, so over in Geelong. My nan was in the stolen generation, as her mother and mother before her, so my great-grandmother and my great-great-grandmother. My nan was in Sister Kate, sadly, and her mother and grandmother were from New Norcia, were put in the New Norcia missions. So my nan was in the Breed the Blackout era. So if you've ever watched Rabbit Proof Fence and they show Mr. Neville was the one decided on where people went. My nan was then told to go into Sister Kate's. So
what's Sister Kate's? Was that like a children's home?
Yes, it was. They were all horrific. If you ask any mob about their ancestors and going into those places, they were all separated. Nan was one of five, and they were separated. I know one of my nan's sisters was taken over to Adelaide while the rest were over in the West. So they rekindled as they got older. But the one that was over in Adelaide, it was sadly had lost a lot of that connection, being, you know, so far away, and so things didn't pan out as well. But Nan also went on to have eight children, my mum being the oldest of eight. And so she was over in Kalgoorlie and Leonora when I was very young, or when I was born. Nan, mum was over here, but we went over the West every holidays, any chance we could get. Mum was over there even before I went to school, we were over there a lot. So Nan would take us all out bush. And so looking back on it, like they were the best times of my life, like going out and just being out on country and learning but not knowing you're learning, like looking for bardi grubs or witchetty grubs, and you know, calling everyone auntie. I always had like, like I'd be saying to Nan, they're not my auntie. And she's like, yeah, they're your auntie, you know. And but I always had that little feist in me. And then it wasn't 2 years later I learned why I had to call everyone auntie and, you know, that whole respect, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm glad and proud to have that in my culture, that we do that and show respect to our elders. And then sadly, though, when I was 11, my mum was killed in a car accident. And so things drastically changed for me. And Nan moved back over here. We had a lot of lost connection with my mum's, obviously, was the Indigenous side. And there was a lot of lost connection just through traumas of my mum's death. She was like the ringleader, I suppose you could say. So I did go down a bad path. I discovered alcohol at 14 because it took away all my pain. I didn't cope well. My mum was like my best friend. I did counselling for, you know, years later, and they said to describe your childhood. And I said skipping. Like, it was just, I had the best childhood. Like, we'd be out on country all the time. And so where I came up with Kiwi, even though it's not my language, was you'd be out there and it'd be dinner time and you'd just hear Kiwi, like my dad yelling out, you know, to come back for dinner. And so it was something that definitely brought me back to my childhood. And so after doing everything backwards, I shouldn't say backwards, I had three kids, and now I'm lucky and fortunate enough to have three grandkids. But I had my first at 17. So he's now 30. So if that shows my age. But yeah, like I've got a 9-year-old granddaughter now and a 7-month-old and a 4-month-old granddaughter and grandson.
Wow.
So
you're one of those spunky young grandmas.
Well, yeah, like being such a young mum, it was tough, but I think it was in my genes after losing mum, both my sisters. I have two younger sisters, so it was already in me to look after, you know, family. But it was I wouldn't say it was the wisest choice I made, but I don't regret it for a second. I love my family. But then through all my angst and anxieties from all the issues of losing mum, not being out on country a lot, disconnection with family, it took me years to find the self-confidence within myself to be able to do anything of my passion, of what I wanted to do. And that was always to cook with food, because that's what I learned being out with Nan, how to cook anything out in the bush. So it wasn't until I met my husband, who I'm now 15 years with, who had that confidence in me for me to be able to thrive, I guess. And so we got a little takeaway, Shaz's takeaway, and I got the confidence to work, you know, and serve people and just learn my skills and learn how much I actually love being around people and how it really like helps connect me. That then we went into Kiwi, which then I started bringing all my culture in because I felt comfortable and confident to start bringing that into it and proud within myself. And I was healing myself just through my own journey. But I could not have done it without my husband. And now it's through doing that, there's been a lot of reconnections with my my family. There was no fault of anyone's. It just, you know, things just did what they did. But so now I ring my aunties all the time, and, you know, for recipes and paintings or questions. And I'm at the age of ripe old age of 47, and I've probably never been happier, to be honest.
Wow. I mean, you showed such determination and strength of character to get through what you've got through and to create what you've created. I just can't help but think of your Nan, who was stolen and then, you know, must have had a really full-on journey of her own to reconnect with country and those traditions.
Yeah, as a lot of elders, I mean, we have our files on Nan, like which are horrific to read through. You know, like she was taken when she was 2, so there was, and obviously they weren't allowed to use language. There was a lot of lost culture, so Nan. Is I don't remember mum a lot. I don't know why. I think I've blocked a lot of memories, sadly. But I do remember Nan being one of the most powerful women that I knew. And I never knew why, because sadly, because of all the horrificness that happened to her, she didn't share any of that with us grandkids, you know. And so it wasn't till after her passing that I knew a lot more in the way of reading through all her files, because we got to all her government documents. So my aunties knew a lot more than I did, but it was, I think that's what made her such a strong, powerful woman. Like, she was constantly running away, to the point where she knew the bush that well that she, they would send Nan out to find trackers when they'd get lost in the bush, because oh my she was God. Just so good at it. And so I know where I got my the fire in my belly from. I know where I got my stand up for myself voice from. And that helps empower me when I'm having like a down day, or I'm, you know, not feeling so strong within, especially going through COVID. I'm a hugger, as you know. Like, I love cuddles and I love that connection of touch. And so it's rocked me a bit. So when I'm feeling down, and, you know, I think of my mum and my nan, and you see the eagles, Warida in my language, or Bunjil for language for here, for the Bunurong. And it always resonates with my family and strength, and just keep going. You've got this. So,
yeah, wow. I'm sure that the experiences that she had taking you onto country, and, you know, cooking with you and all that, must have been part of her, I guess, recovery and healing, or at least I hope it was. It makes me think of my grandma, who was a Holocaust survivor, and she, you know, I didn't know much about it when I was little, and she died when I was 15, but, you know, we spent quite a lot of time with her, and just the light in her eyes at being around family. And I think even, you know, oblivious family, like me and my brother and sister were, we didn't really know what the darkness was that she was carrying, you know, when we were little. And you just think, well, yeah, just to be able to connect and have that, that's that victory, isn't it? That you are together, you are with family, you know, there is love there. And yeah, whatever has happened, the light hasn't been wholly extinguished. So I think it's really important to, really important and beautiful.
Yeah. So you've got like similar traumas, like within your family, because it's like, it breaks some people, and that like gets passed down through generations, those anxieties, those issues that, you know, like, and I think it's things like NAIDOC week and those things where we can have the discussions about the past truths. It's, we're starting to bring them into schools now, that true history of all that. Like, you talked to Ben, like Sherry, when I was talking to him, and he knew more from being in New Zealand of Australian history than we were being taught of Australian history, because there was that such like embarrassment of like hiding the real truths. And so it would be the same. We all knew about the Holocaust, but you know what I mean? Like that feelings that you have, they're just horrific, and of how people can do things to people, you know. It just rocks me how you could do, I couldn't even do the things that they do to people, that to an animal, you know, any living thing. And it's just, it really does rock me sometimes. But I think the way to heal and get past that is to talk about it more, and it's happening now with social media and other forms of education. People are starting to realize and really acknowledge the past, and that's what's going to help heal the future. It really is.
So, Sharon, what next? Like, what are your hopes for your business, and what do you wish people knew about your business and Aboriginal businesses in general?
What next for me is, I did tell you and send you a pic, but so I will mention it. I'm bringing out a vodka. So that's next on me, on my agenda.
Awesome.
And so
it's a flavored, it's got,
yes, it's a flavored, I'm working on a desert lime vodka. So I actually, like I sent you pics, I only picked it up this morning. So I'll be taste testing at some point, some of the samples of the different grades, and hopefully we can get that right and get that out. So I'm pretty excited about that. On another note on that too, I hear, like, you hear of all these I suppose certain people talking about things where we get given so much. I can tell you now that I'm the complete opposite of that. I pay for, or we pay for everything, and as do any in business, Indigenous business that I know. We don't get handed stuff where people seem to think we do. I don't know if that's not the topic you want to talk about, but it's a topic that we hear about, this not working for what we have. And as you know, I work really hard for where I am and what I've got, and I pay for every single thing that I bring out too. So I just wanted to sort of put that out on air as
Yeah, absolutely. I don't, yeah, he works super hard. And I mean, I don't think if they're, I mean, lots of businesses of all types have been eligible for grants or, assistance along the way. And there's no, that I'm not, Indigenous or non-Indigenous, I think there's no shame in being assisted. But if, I don't think, yeah, there's no red carpet laid out for Aboriginal businesses or Aboriginal people. That is for bloody sure.
Yes, exactly. If anything, we have to work harder because we have to prove ourselves a lot more, which is why we tend to band together and help each other to grow. Because once you see how we work and how we operate, you generally love us and keep supporting us. And that's the important thing here. So I just wanted to put that out that we all work damn hard. I do not know one Indigenous business that doesn't. Like, we're all working so hard, and we're all shouting out for each other as well. So that's me on the front at the moment, bringing out the two new flavors and working on my vodka. And when I say working on that, and as I said about money, that's one of the things where I've got to save for, because I'd been saving for a little bit now, so it's not too far off that I'll be able to bring that out, I hope. On another thing, I'd love to, I suppose, talk about, like I spoke about a few Indigenous businesses that I plan on doing things with in that hub space, which is absolutely incredible. But yeah, there's so many. There's Buy Black. If you look up Buy Black, they have a whole list of different Indigenous businesses that you can support. I at Kuwi, if you look on Kuwi's webpage upstairs, they're all Indigenous businesses. If you're looking for an Indigenous business and you're unsure on whether it is, always look on their about in their webpage. In their about, any Indigenous business will say where they're from, where their mob's from, and who they are. And that's how you'll know the legitimacy of their business. So that's a nice, easy way to reassure yourself that you're supporting the right people.
Yeah, I do find it surprising that even now, and you'd think there'd be a lot of awareness that some people who are selling Indigenous ingredients, don't even engage with the idea of, the origin and the owners of those ingredients.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I have spoken to a few businesses about, trying to work with them on different products, and leveraging myself on that collaboration. But them not wanting a bar of me because they wanted to bring out their own non-Indigenous versions. And it's like, okay, you do your thing, and I'll do mine. I'll find the right person, that I can do that with. So from that point of view, it does make it tough. It really does, and I don't think people understand the actual impacts that it has, or that they have, on that space either.
You mean like the like
The
how bad it
knockoffs, the
makes you
ones,
feel? Oh,
yeah, the
yeah.
knockoffs. Like, even with art, like, the Aboriginal art. I'm no artist, but the Aboriginal art, in that space now, like, so many people are doing knockoffs, like which they do with everything, but it just breaks my heart because so much work and like cultural knowledge goes into doing these paintings, and then you see non-Indigenous people actually pretending to be an Indigenous business to sell their art, and it is really gross. So and it just saddens me that there isn't that protection, and so we're It's hard. We're learning, like, those, like, about all the IPs. I know I am at the moment learning about all those different processes about protecting our knowledge and protecting what we have. And it's so important because that's how we give back. Like, I've recently joined a group called Black Duck, and so I'm working with some awesome people in that space, and Duma Cafe over in Bright. She's one of the main facilitators of that, and it's about educating and training and helping mob from Northern Territory, like, get into the workforce that have never, you know, been off country and had those work experiences. And through a collective of us, we're working on helping them and to give them the confidence, the knowledge, the actual, like, physical working, like, to get the experiences. And we're trying to do that, like, on a scale of we've got someone in every state so that we can start facilitating that on a sort of a grander scale. So that's something I'm really proud of.
Yeah, that's super awesome. That's so good.
I also work with the Koori Academy. So shout out to them. And that's mob playing basketball. So it's the kids doing the basketball, which is pretty cool. So that's pretty deadly. I'm going to that actually into Knox this Sunday to an Indigenous round.
Oh, so good. There's so much happening. There's so much positive stuff happening. As well as the tough stuff. There are so many good stories, and yeah, Jala Jala is definitely one of those. And I only like my pantry cupboard when it's got some Jala Jala chocolate in it. Otherwise I'm not really interested. Sharon, it's been such an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for sharing your story, your passion, your energy. I'm just, love what you do. And yeah, it's really an honor to have you on the show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for allowing me to speak today and have that platform.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.